You're listening to an event from the U.S. Institute of Peace, part of the USIP podcast network. For more information about our work around the world, visit usip.org and check us out on social media.
I'm Megan Beyer, the co-chair of the Women Building Peace Council and Awards. As director of the Department of State's Office of Art and Embassy, I have a confession to make. Our most favorite, the sentimental favorite, U.S. Embassy all over the world is in Guatemala City. It just opened, and if you have a chance to go, you really must. As you enter, there's this two-story atrium with fantastic views, but above hangs this wooden structure. And it's made from the burly ceiba tree, the national tree of Guatemala, and America's Bristol cone pine found in Nevada's Great Basin. This piece, created by American artist John Grade, represents the melding of two cultures and the alignment of two nations, conveying strength and inspiring symbiosis. And in many ways, the United States and that piece and Guatemala have a lot in common. It's in fact called the mirror. That's what we call the piece. And it represents the mirroring that you can see, the alignment that you can see on the topic we're going to be discussing today, Guatemala's efforts to empower youth. Our distinguished guest is Dr. Lucretia Panado, the First Lady of Guatemala. She is a medical doctor with specific expertise in public health and development. Guatemala has the largest economy and the biggest population in Central America. More than 60% of Guatemalans are under the age of 30. Tens of thousands of these young people embark on a costly and very dangerous journey to reach the U.S. border every year. Many arrive as unaccompanied minors from communities with high levels of poverty, with little access to education or health care. Empowering Guatemalan youth, those efforts by Guatemala gives the youth skills and the confidence to secure better futures for themselves in Guatemala, in those communities, which of course means stronger and safer communities, and for the United States means a diminishing of the problems at the border. So First Lady Dr. Panado and her husband, the newly elected President Bernardo Arevalo, met cute, as they say in Hollywood, on the job. They were both on different assignments from the United Nations doing development work. They are our kind of people here at the USIP. For those who are new to our institution, we were established in 1984 as a nonprofit, nonpartisan, independent organization to advance peace. We work in conflict zones all around the world, including Latin America. In Colombia, we've supported the negotiation and implementation of peace accords, especially to ensure the participation of women and minorities. In Central America, our work focuses on youth and marginalized indigenous communities, where we work to build trust between citizens and security forces, the police. Well, you're going to hear more about that today. I am here to welcome. Before we get into the panel, I want to welcome the Guatemalan Ambassador, Hugo Beteta. Your Excellency, thank you for joining us. And now, to introduce our panel, may I present Vice President of Washington Office of Latin America, Maureen Meyer. Maureen?
Thank you, and thank you to the United States Institute for Peace for co-hosting this event with WOLA, the Washington Office on Latin America. I am pleased to introduce Guatemalan First Lady, Doctora Lucrecia Peinado, who, as was mentioned, is a physician and surgeon with a long trajectory of working on projects related to public health and development. And Milady Gugliarte, the Deputy Assistant Administrator for the Bureau of Latin America and the Caribbean at USAID, for this important discussion on ways to support and empower young people in Guatemala. Addressing the root causes of migration has been a strategic initiative for the Biden administration, including, like we'll hear today, the initiative Jóvenes con Propósito, co-designed by Dr. Peinado and USAID, which we will hear about more today. Bilateral cooperation with the United States is a key way to address challenges facing Guatemalan society, including lack of economic opportunity, inequality, and youth violence and recruitment by gangs, which are also driving factors for migration. I would mention, if you look just at last year, migration from Central America was 27% of all of the apprehensions that we had at the US-Mexico border. So we continue to see high levels of migration. And we believe that it's fundamental that the US work with Guatemalan authorities to create opportunities, especially for young people, including indigenous youth, that are sustainable and compatible with local needs. We look forward to learning more about this initiative and how it can have a positive impact on young people today. So welcome, and please come forward, Dr. Peinado and Milady Gugliarte. Thank you.
Hello.
Hola.
Again.
Buenos días. We did not color coordinate, no. If you were thinking.
Yeah, but we're somehow connected.
I think so,
not
too.
Only through the initiative.
I agree. Good morning, everyone. Buenos dias a todas y a todos. Thank you to the U.S. Institute of Peace and the Washington Office in Latin America for hosting us here today. I am so thrilled to be joining Doctora Peinado to speak about Jóvenes con Propósito. Jóvenes con Propósito is part of a larger Central America Service Corps initiative that Vice President Harris launched in 2022 to give young people in El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras training, paid community service opportunities, mentorship, and a path to future employment. We started this initiative with an initial pilot implemented by our partner, Glasswing International. And taking what we learned from this pilot, at the end of May, I had the opportunity to travel to Guatemala to officially launch alongside Doctora Peinado the initiative. Doctora Peinado has been a champion from the very beginning. She not only got involved through her leadership, but she actually sat down, rolled up her sleeves, and helped in the co-design and creation of the initiative. Again, through her leadership, the Guatemalan government, along with the United States, have joined forces to give life to an initiative that places youth at the center of development, that responds to the urgent needs of young people, and that reaffirms the shared commitment of the progress and prosperity of our nations. In our conversations with youth at the launch, we saw the excitement and the possibility of giving back to their communities and being change agents in their country. They are really the driving force behind why we launched this initiative. So without further ado, let's jump into the conversation with a few questions.
Okay.
Doctora Peinado, why did you get involved early on in the design of Jóvenes con Propósito? And really, what motivated you to do this?
Well, it's like most things in life, several conditions and causes came together. And at that moment, we were in the transition period, just before actually entering actively into the new government. And I was meeting with several actors, agencies, and donors. So at some point, we had a meeting organized by USAID Guatemala. And of course, we were all empowered by our the president, the commitment, the mandate of the government, and the national plan, which also, among other issues, is centered in empowering youth and giving opportunities to youth. At that moment, the different organizations of the U.S. government presented us with the different programs and opportunities of funding or technical assistance that they were already providing. And we were able to discuss opportunities to work from the office of the First Lady. And the main interest I myself wanted to champion or promote or support the national government and the presidency. So when, this is an anecdote that I love repeating, is that I was given some different documents, you know, very executive documents about, for example, INL, Homeland Security, and other agencies. And there was this one page, you know, about the initiative, the Central American Youth Program. And it attracted me, it was intentionally put to attract my attention to one specific activity that said, in the process of implementation, that had not begun. They were just, USAID was just negotiating with the implementer, the one that had won the award, the cooperative agreement. In the design, they had not even signed the cooperative agreement. So it was actually this circle in the path of implementation that said co-design with the First Lady. So we discussed a bit about it. So I saw immediately the door of opportunity, because it is one of our priorities, the government priority, of course. If we have 6 out of every 10 Guatemalans between the age of 10 and 29, you know, mm-hmm. and within that population, we only have 2.5 million that are actually in studying in a formal system. You know, and the ones that finish primary school are mm-hmm. less than 2,000 every year. So when you have all that problematic besides the migration and remigration that is happening, it's impossible not to be very clear that our investment has to be, you know, in giving opportunities to this more than half of our population. So the opportunity, as other times in my professional career, I said, okay, you open the door, now I'm in. Yes, yeah, so we worked together with USAID and with the mandate of President Arevalo that in his government, there were no solo players. There are no solo players, that we all have to work in a harmonious way and play as an orchestra and with the highest quality, like a philharmonic. That is the way he puts it. And that is the way that all governmental officials know that they have this, it's the governmental style. So since that opportunity in December and mm-hmm. January, before a change of government, we worked intensely with people that we already knew that were going to be involved in the different governmental institutions, and took that chance to give our feedback for before the signature of this cooperative agreement between USAID, that channels the funding to Guatemala for this initiative, and Glasswing, that is this non-governmental international organization that has a lot of experience in Latin America, but especially in Central America, and has worked previously in Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala, and has had presence for many, many years in Guatemala, and has a successful history of working with local partners, local grassroots organizations. So we immediately, you know, got to work with them, you know, in the thinking, in the design, in the complementation of their actual proposal, you know, to put the elements that were having a priority for the, we have clearness of what are the priorities of the government, and to share also what programs were already in place or were being designed to be implemented in the actual government. So we didn't have a solo initiative and program being implemented, but a program that we could benefit from and expand from the governmental side. So we've had an intense work, very intense work with a donor agency, with implementer, and with a important number of institutions from the government that have a say and responsibility to work for youth and with youth in Guatemala.
Well, I think it's terrific. You know, I would say that the stars align, right? Having someone with your background. I recently, learned when I was in Guatemala that Dr. Peinado worked at USAID for a number of years. So she knows the business inside out, the lingo, but really brilliant in the way that you've been able to make the initiative so inclusive, also including several government institutions and making this cross-cutting throughout your other initiatives as well. It's a great opportunity to work with you, and I'm glad we, you know, put that big circle initially in the proposal.
Yes.
What issues do Guatemalan youth face that you're trying to address through this initiative?
Well, this is a large issue that the whole government and President Arevalo with his team, and it is clearly shown in the national, actually the policy and the governmental plan, you know. It is not an issue that can be addressed only through a specific initiative. But having said that, I personally, and from my experience, and never ever, you know, dismiss an opportunity, because something can begin, or mostly begins, in a smaller level or intensity or coverage, but it has the capacity of to last and expand. Those are histories that in our country, but in other countries, we have success stories that do that. So, having said that, among the different activities that the government is now putting together services in a localized territories, like the national initiative called Mano a Mano, that intends to all the institutions from the government that have to be present and supporting in a coordinated way in the territories, in the local areas, in the municipalities. And so that is already taking place, you know, to have several opportunities and enhance and do synergy there where things are needed, where the needs are being evidently expressed. So having that mandate and policy and strategy in the government, it was only natural that we did the same type of work and coordination with this initiative. So the government as a whole, you know, among all the challenges that are present historically and in our country, also is addressing migration, is committed, you know, to address the root causes of migration. There are several issues that are common mm-hmm. to all, both our countries, and that we are natural partners, mm-hmm. partners, and we have been for an important period of time, 175 years of collaboration, you know, and formal relationship with the United States mm-hmm. of America, for example. But having explained that context, what happens is that this initiative give us the opportunity, and we're taking it, you know, to in parallel work with the same type of strategies, align the same strategies through the different organizations of government, you know, to expand the coverage, that means the opportunities to youth, with similar interventions that will benefit this youth. So we have one strategy that has been based in evidence that has been mm-hmm. Built in the last 2 years with these pilots in three departments, mm-hmm. what we call, so it will be the equivalent of the states mm-hmm. here. So we have the departamentos and specific municipalities. This is a type of intervention that has been learning from itself through these first 2 years of implementation. Now it's the time for expansion, progressive mm-hmm. expansion. And now that we have this new government that has the mandate and the willingness and the political will, you know, to actually improve, but really improve the lives and the opportunities for this youth, we are putting all our efforts from these different institutions to work together mm-hmm. and learn from each other. For example, the Ministry of Development has a very similar initiative that was just, let's say, in a design phase. Mm-hmm. But if you read the description of both initiatives, the Jóvenes con Propósito and the governmental initiative, then you could say, well, this is the same initiative, you know. So why duplicate? This governmental initiative had begun to implement the phase, let's say, the step one and two of these activities. But at the same time, we find that Jóvenes con Propósito had already designed a lot more clear what will be step three and mm-hmm. four. So say, okay, let's use that, you know, mm-hmm. as a trail, and let's work together and speed up mm-hmm. you know, the design and implementation of the governmental activity, and let's do it together. And that's what we have taken the chance to do. I want to give you a practical example. Jóvenes con Propósito provides scholarships or some financial support mm-hmm. for youth to continue studying or while they have the access to their first job. Or so the government, through its labor ministry, they also have a specific line of work mm-hmm. that's not new, that provides the same financial support mm-hmm. for youth to go into their first job, as well as continuing, you know, if possible, their technical training or university or the level of studies. So we already have that. That is a part of the design mm-hmm. of the initiative. And so we are we have the element, those type of elements, I could tell you, in the Youth Secretariat, in the Ministry of Health, mm-hmm. and we have that in the Ministry of Education, and the Human Rights Commission, Presidential Commission. Mm-hmm. So there are some other initiatives that have and work and have the mandate on these same elements that the initiative. So what we did is that we have the representatives, the delegates of the decision-making level from all these secretariats or ministries sit at the same table and see, okay, if we have this initiative that has aligned all this element that has been proven to work before, let's do ourselves the same thing from the governmental side. And let's align the same elements and work together in the territories. That is also a mandate by the president. It's like we work focusing on specific territories. You know, all of us coordinate in a territory. So that's how we believe that we are going to have synergies. You know, having one initiative, but not only stay and accompany one initiative, the initiative, you know, but actually for the benefit of people, of this youth, putting all the resources that already exist, but putting those resources to work in a coordinated way, in complementary territories, in let's say we're just deciding where, but we already have that co-design also from the governmental side. So we're thinking of not only using and benefiting actively from the initiative, but making synergy, expanding it through the, and I insist, coordinated, integrated work from the governmental side, you know, to do its job, to implement the mandate, the core of what these organizations exist for, and directed to the benefit of youth. Enough is enough. You know, after all this corruption and lack of interest and responsibility, commitment from previous governments, it's like there is no time to waste. So we need to, it's only been 6 months, but I think that working with the different partners of the initiative in the country, but working as hard with all the members of government, we've done a lot in a very small time, and the initiative has not yet come to the territories now. You know, so we do intensive co-design, intensive joint planning, and some modifications of the initial approach, a mapping in the territories where the initiative is going to be supporting, but also where all these organizations of the government have physical presence, a programmatic presence, investments, you know. So we are already working together to decide what the fiscal year planning for 2025 will look like. So all that's been happening, and a good planning also supports good implementation, good monitoring, good coordination. So that's what we're doing now. I am still, telling the implementer, so when am I going to go to the territories and see and talk to the first youth, you know, being included in the program? It's like, when? I said, okay, we're doing it very soon. So although the initiative is not, it has not arrived to the local areas, I think we're going to see all the benefits when, you know, we have already all this youth being receiving an integral support from the initiative and through from the governmental institutions.
Well, I love the sense of urgency that you inject in this project. I feel the same way, and I'm glad that you're having those questions raised very frequently, like when are we getting numbers and results, right? Because I think that's the objective, trying to reach a certain pocket of the population that you know, there's a phrase, una deuda pendiente, right, with youth. And I know that they played a critical role in President Arevalo's, you know, election.
Right.
So I think it's a very important population. And I think the project can only be scaled up. I mean, I think there's so much potential, clearly with your knowledge, your leadership, your commitment. The private sector also plays a key role.
Yes.
And I think that that's also going to be a very important aspect of this initiative. Moving forward, what is your vision for this initiative and other similar ones in Guatemala?
Okay.
I know you have big plans, so.
Yes, we need to be big dreamers and achieve as much as possible. Yeah, well, think big, you know, and aim big. But it's because it's necessary, you know. There isn't, it's not a sense of urgency. It is an actual urgency. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a small period of time, so the in government, but in this period of time, the president, the government, and us that support that those activities are committed to work hard and not only plant seeds, but have a short-term and longer-term results as much as possible. So when you see what is, maybe what makes some sound, you know, there, some noise, to me is my vision. So it's not only my vision. You know, it has to be the vision of, yes, of a government that is committed not only to this period, but that can see, in the future and say, this is an opportunity to set bases, mm-hmm. you know. So, yes, I know that the vision of one person can make a lot of changes. We've seen that in history. There are many examples. You know, but and I put a lot of drive into the things that I do. But that's been me all since I was born. So that's the style. Thank you. So, but it has to be a joint vision, you know. Mm-hmm. And there's where we have joint vision with the government of the United States, that we have mm-hmm. partnered in other goals. Mm-hmm. That we have common interests. So this is a vision that also the people of the United States has, you know, to reduce the number of immigrants, you know, across the border. Yeah, and it's actually not only to stop, but really wanting these youth and these people to have real opportunities and realize their dreams in their countries. So this is a joint vision. A joint vision that is presented in this government's policy, in this government's plan. Mm-hmm. So that is why when you say, what is my vision? Okay, so my vision is within all of this umbrella, you know, of joint aims, and vision is to actually see, you know, in practice and meet, you know, the face of each one of these adolescents and youth, you know, mm-hmm. and each one. Let me make a parenthesis here because when we're in one of the two secretariats that I coordinate, because the president has delegated me that role of coordination, one of those has the responsibility to work with children and adolescents that migrate without unaccompanied, mm-hmm. you know, and also, so that is exactly, you know, one of the aims of this initiative. But they use an acronym that is NNA. So an NNA, yeah, this an NNA. That, sort of, what's an NNA? I said in Spanish, NNA. And I said, es niñez no acompañada. Unaccompanied
minors.
It's like, what? So they are not an acronym. Stop using acronyms to refer to people. You know, so they are small citizens, personitas, you know. So we if you use acronyms to refer to people, mm-hmm. yes, we're very easily forgetting that they are these people, you mm-hmm. know, that they are human beings, that they have a life, that they have a family, that they have needs, and that we have not protected them, mm-hmm. you know, for many things, you know. We have not given them the opportunities. So I say this because what is my vision about the initiative is actually get, you know, to know one, as many of these young lives, you know, mm-hmm. Changed. That you can go and listen to these success stories. But they're not success stories. They are youth and children that have succeeded, mm-hmm. you know, in moving ahead, in achieving some of the first steps towards the future that they deserve and that they envisioned. So that is my vision, to try to know as many of them, and all of us try to know as many of them, and then hear from their stories at some point, but hopefully hear from their lives mm-hmm. in few years and said, I was benefited by mm-hmm. that initiative, and here I am.
No, that I think it's not just aspirational, but I see a sense of responsibility. I remember totally. Your upbringing too, very humble beginnings too, and how you really aspire to do more and that you want that for your country and those lives, humanizing what we do and really just not seeing as an acronym or an initiative, but these are lives that you're impacting. I have a lot of other questions, but wanted to ask you in particular, who else are you partnering with to realize the vision for Jóvenes con Propósito and to address youth needs and aspirations? You mentioned a couple of ministries, but I know that your vision of making this a very inclusive, transparent process that each ministry can play a role, whether it's with women, with unaccompanied minor, young women in prison. So maybe mm-hmm. if you can elaborate more on how you see the different partners that mm-hmm. add so much value to the initiative.
Yes. Evidently, we're partnering with the government mm-hmm. of the United States. Yes, then we're also looking forward to partnering in a larger scale with private initiative, because where are these going? Are these youth going to find a job? Mm-hmm. You know, so their first placement on a job needs to have a clear commitment from the private sector, although mm-hmm. we have also agreed that we're going to open spaces for them to work within the institutions of government, you know, because they also will have the opportunity to know, you know, from the inside a bit how a job within the government looks like, or at least should look like, mm-hmm. you know, and so that's a key partnerships that we have to strengthen, because Glasswing has already begun to do that in the areas, mm-hmm. the geographical areas where the initiative is being launched, and local businesses as well, just not big companies that have presence within the country, but local business people. This is why this specific initiative is not 100% rural, you know, but it needs a component of availability of this type of jobs. But at the same time, we need to be creative. You know, I asked the people to be creative, because I don't know about these areas, but there are a lot of jobs that can be offered now, you know, sitting so many places in the world that also use technology, you know, to provide jobs in different areas. So there are private sector, the message is private sector is a key partner. Mm-hmm. local organizations, root organizations, are key, because in our country, as in many other countries, they are key and have been key to sustain a lot of the activities, because most of them have been actually shown that they are learning organizations, you know. And when they learn, they have skills, and they actually implement programs, they continue searching for resources. When this initial source of funding stops, mm-hmm. then they continue providing services, helping youth. So root organizations are key as well, because they learn faster, they stay there, they not only have a period of life like a project or this or an mm-hmm. initiative, you know, they don't begin and end, but they stay. So they are the brains and the skills stay there. So I think local organizations are key, and grants are being given through the Jóvenes con Propósito initiative. So local non-for-profit organizations are going to be the ones that do the one-on-one job, the work, and support with this youth. So that is, I totally believe that's an element of success, you know, because they will stay there. They're not leaving. Most mm-hmm. of them have survived for long periods of time, you know, and have strengthened their administrative and operational capacities. So that those are key players as well. And I don't want to, when we say the communities is, for me, is not, you know, you can have all this, how do you imagine a community? But actually, you know, the family of that guy or a girl, you know, the family, you know, also needs to be involved. Maybe that is the first child mm-hmm. that will also, you know, that will be able to continue studying, you know. Maybe they will be the first one to actually be able to go into the university, finish the university. Mm-hmm. And hopefully those will be the first ones that don't migrate, you know, to find opportunities, but they stay because they are being given opportunities and supported, you know, mm-hmm. locally. So the actual, as I say, the actual human beings that are the social network or support to those youth will definitely, you know, need to be involved, because it's going to be part of the change. We were talking previous to this event that if it is true that if the eldest child, you know, sets this kind of example, maybe the others, the youngest, are going to aim, you know, also desire to have this change. Yes, that's like very natural if to think about. But yes, we need to have that seed. You know, we need to plant that seed and that example in a family, you know, because how I see it is that if you are in these conditions and see that the grandfather has done the same routine, mm-hmm. You know, living the same conditions, and then you see your father and your parents repeating and being the same cycle, how can you actually dream of something different? You mm-hmm. aim for, you want something different. But how will that different life look like if you don't see any opportunities? So yes, having somebody in the family that begins to have a different future, a different path, of course that should be an inspiration. And that is when I have not actually told a personal story, but I've I've mentioned this like around three times, I guess. Then I was born in a family that's a poor, you know, family. And I always like to say we were very happy, you know, but we were a poor family, you know, we had joy and stuff. But when I was discussing early when we met with the president, he said, no, you didn't grow in a poor family, yes. Look at the international indicators for development. And you say, so yes, I had our piso de tierra, you know, the
use of, dirt,
yeah, dirt floor. Floor, you know, and we only have one water source in for the whole family. We have these wooden walls, and we have the divisions between the spaces made by a curtain or, you know, any other furniture and stuff like that. So I had the opportunity to live, to experience the transition from a poor family to a middle income family through very, very hard work from my parents, you know. But when I see it, you know, it actually was their effort with very little support of the government, but they did that with sweating and and time investing in that. And I do not remember being, I was not never 2 years in the same school, because we begin from these local schools and stuff, but every year that they could pay a better private school, because the national yes, national programs, you know, they felt they were not the quality that, so they paid for this. So every year they could pay a little bit more. I remember when I got to sixth grade is like, my teacher told them, this girl likes English, you know, so you should invest in her learning a bit more English. So they continue paying, you know. I don't remember friends from school because there were too many changes, you know, but I remember those enjoying, you know, the challenges of studying and stuff. So I was, my grandfather only finished second year mm-hmm. of school. My parents only studied for sixth grade because they had to work to help them, you know, support economically, financially, the family, because they had they have an absent father in the case of my mother, and so on and so forth. But I had a role model in my grandfather. Very, you know, he's self-taught like three languages, and he used to. And my father used to also. He was self-educated in classical music, and he wanted, you know, for us, you know, we were playing in this area, and he was also trying to teach us some classical music. So you see those examples that are inspiring there in the family, even though you live in a poor, let's say, economically speaking, environment. But I also was the first that went to university and graduated. So what can I tell you? Now here I am, being the first lady. Yes, so well, it's possible.
Thank you so much for sharing this personal, you know, story. I think it's inspiring for mm-hmm. those that are hearing us, and the lives that you're going to touch in the time as first lady. I can already see it. I can relate to some extent. I'm also a first college graduate, and I think yeah. the opportunities that you're given and the mentorship, which I think there's a lot of that in the initiative, mm-hmm. is going to go a long way. So thank you again. I know we have questions from the audience, from those online, so maybe we can turn to our colleagues.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Peinado, once again for being here. And the first question that we have for you is from two youth leaders from Guatemala who are also USIP Generation Change Fellows. One is Jonathan from Yolu Organization, and the other young leader is from Sofia Posadas. And their question is, how is the participation of young people being considered on the national agenda? And what are the mechanisms and strategies to increase youth participation?
Yes, one of the examples that I can mention here is that the youth secretariat, you know, didn't do its job, its mandate. Now it is very quick, you know, to see the dynamism and the activity and the strengthening of the networks and the strengthening of the programs that they are doing. So those are youth supporting youth. I think that is key. Then are the other initiatives to increase job availability, you know, and to increase the coverage of basic education. And yes, that takes time, but it's being addressed already. So I do believe that through sports, through culture, you know, that are the commitments that are being right now, you know, taken very seriously by the government, you know, by extending the coverage, the availability, and the quality of those services. Those are joint possibilities that we are, that the government is driving simultaneously to the mm-hmm. territories. But I would like to highlight that the CONJUVE, that is the National Council for Youth, is now being led by very young, active leaders, and I think it is necessary for youth to work with youth and to be supported by youth. That is key. No more adults talking about youth needs like we are doing here. Yes, you know, next time it has to be youth from the initiative here talking.
I agree.
Yeah, so or men talking about women needs, or not indigenous people talking about indigenous people needs.
I agree.
Yeah, so it is very important, you know, to strengthen the networks in different areas for youth to work with youth. And they did it spontaneously. Now, you know, during this election process, but you know, it was not because of one leader, one figure, or a party. It was because they were convinced that they needed a change. And it was youth who began to lead other youth and send a message that they wanted democracy and they wanted a way out. So I think that's very important.
And just as a reminder from the audience that you can also ask questions, and Rachel will be collecting those, and she has cards. But in the meantime, another question from Paula Solano from the Asociación de Personas Productivas con Discapacidad, mm-hmm. or people living with disabilities, is currently you're working on dialogue tables with people living with disabilities. But specifically, she is interested to know regarding youth with disabilities, is there any specific actions planned, especially in the labor and educational fields?
Yes, well, what I negotiated with the president, what I told him before, you know, the change of government is that I wanted to use my convening, my coordination, mm-hmm. and my role to provide visibility, you know, and inspire and other things to lead two national causes. One is the national cause with and for people with disabilities that is already on the way, and the other one is a national cause for mental health. You know, so this last one is under a period of design, and it will have a prevention and family and community level focus. But actually, we have also moved fast with the work, interinstitutional work. So it's the same model, it's the same style, you know, and it's the same mandate to work along the institutions. So we have been working with at least now 36 organizations of people with disabilities, and also some of the organizations that support, that serve, give services to people with disabilities. And we have right now nine top-level ministers and secretariats representatives there in this dialogue space. And also the Congress Commission for People with Disability, for Disabilities is has come on board, you know, because we are the way we're working there is with a lot of transparency and really listening and acting upon the demands that have been mostly ignored or left in you know, for the 10th priority, you know. So these organizations, you know, they're from different focuses. We have women organizations, organizations that work with sports, you know, like Paralympic type of stuff, you know, and also with education and stuff. So that is something that we are going, we're doing at the national level, because the president's mandate to the cabinet was that in this government, we needed to set the basis of the institutional institutionality, institutional grounds, you know, to actually serve and attend the needs and the priorities of people with disabilities, you know, according to their dignity and their rights. And that is a very clear mandate, and that is a space, a dialogue space that is already very actively working all together again, you know, the same focus, you know, everybody sitting on the same table, working together, delivering soon, but also creating consensus and trying to develop trust, because it's very difficult to have trust with each other and civil society within and government because of the history. So we are actually doing that. And in the initiative, the Jóvenes con Propósito, what we as government agreed with the implementer and with USAID, and that they're going to be not just any youth and who's applying, but actually have a positive action, you know, that. So we're going to, we need to have there to benefit youth with disabilities. So it has to be evident, clear, you know, part of the success indicators, monitoring indicators. And so that is actually one of the requirements, you know, active search and benefitive youth. And I also want to tell you that also we have very young mothers, you know, that are single mothers. That's also one of the requirements. And gender balance, as well as, well, participation of the different indigenous populations. You know, it's not only, we have tenemos cuatro pueblos, no? So it's not only the Mayan, but the Xincas and the Afro descendants. And so that's also part of the criteria. And other must is that we are benefiting youth that are have been in conflict with the law, and they are mostly institutionalized, not the ideal, but they are there, and they're in the last 2 years being supported to go back very productively into the society. So we have also asked that some of this, youth, girls and boys, are also benefited by the initiative to support them, you know, to continue studying, to get their first job, etc. So we're trying to be as comprehensive in the support as possible, but consciously, not by chance.
Do we have time for one more question? I have a question from the audience here. And it's about the aspect, the participatory aspect of this initiative. How have you included the opinions of youth? How have you included the opinions and ideas of youth in the preparation of the program, and how are you going to do so going forward?
Yeah, so let's talk about the design phase. So we got to know the initiative when it had already had this first 2 years of preparation and operational research, where we know also by fact that they have done this very participatory approach within the program, and the learning comes from that, you know. So that is one issue. The other is that we have proposed, among other specific activities, you know, that they have horizontal exchange with this youth. You know, if they are in one of the departments of the country, one of the states, and the others, they can also come like every other, you know, couple times of a year or something, and get to have this exchange, to know their different realities. It's not the same reality in the western part or the northern part of the country, and if there are different ethnic backgrounds or anything. So that is something we want them to learn from each other by experience. You know, I totally, you know, believe, I have experienced that only being exposed to a different reality, you know, shakes you in some way inside of you. Mm-hmm. So definitely, if they are exposed to different realities within their peers, you know, geographically or ethnically or any, you know, it's going to make also a change. They can, you know, experience the change between their peers. I think that's very important. That's something that we have, you know, also said, this has to happen in the program. You know, also have these other opportunities, fellowships, and, you know, in the way that they can individually, but also then collectively, come back to their communities and make this change. For example, if we have opportunities to select some of them, you know, and get to know different, you know, be exposed to different activities, realities in environmental things, in education, you know, this. If you give them the opportunity to see a different reality, you know, then when they come back with this leadership, they can act like a stone being thrown in a very quiet pond, you know. Mm-hmm. They will make, ripple. It will reproduce. So I do believe that investing in these different leaderships and exposing them to different realities, you know, it will change them. So when they go back to their local realities, it doesn't have to be long-term, mm-hmm. you know, very short term, you know, experiences, mm-hmm. that will shake them, say, something else is possible, and just they have the creativity to see how problems are being addressed, mm-hmm. in other areas, and say, I'm going to go back to my community, you know, I've seen this in the western part of the country, now I'm going to the east part of of the country, and do something with the knowledge. So I do believe that experience exchange, exposure to different realities are key to make those changes in impact individually. Mm-hmm. You need to make that, give the opportunity for them to be impacted like that. And I've always said that, it's very evident for me with a medical background, you know, that the eyes have to be trained to see, you know. Mm-hmm. So when I see somebody, you see, oh, they have beautiful earrings, you know, if you are expert in, you know, in images or whatever. But if I see the same person, I might see, okay, she's pale. Maybe she's anemic. You know, so the different eyes are trained to see from a different perspective, or have had, not trained, but have had the opportunity to see the same thing from different perspective. So I think that youth in this kind of programs from the government or from civil society, you know, have to have the opportunity to see different realities. How can they dream of a different reality if they're not exposed? So I do believe that we have to give them, even locally, you know, not go out of the country necessarily, but even locally, we can show them that there are different realities. And even that is key for youth that are in a better off position, you know. We have a severe lack of knowledge, you know, and they live in a different reality in the city, you know, where, so they also will benefit from learning about the real difficulties of youth in Guatemala.
Well, we have unfortunately run out of time, but I can't think of a better partner than you to really lead this initiative. Yes, please.
Thank you. Thank you.
Your sense of clarity, your passion, your vision, really everything that is needed to make an initiative like this one very successful. You have set the bar very high at USAID. We plan on launching.
That's good. Huh? That's good. So let's go.
Yes, very ambitious. We plan to launch similar initiatives in Honduras and El Salvador. I hope we can count on you to really make the other two launching as impactful as I know we're going to do in Guatemala. Thank you for sharing your personal story. I think it really adds a different perspective and a sense of where you come from, right, and where you want to take this. So I think that's also very valuable. And thank you again. And before we wrap up, thank you again to our co-host, USIP, Wola, for all of you that attended. And I'll turn and give you the last words before we conclude.
Well, I really appreciate all the support of a U.S. government, U.S. organizations, and all of you that have given me this opportunity, and my colleagues, here from the embassy and other, you know, because everybody just moved very fast, you know, to give this opportunity. And I believe that every forum, every chance that we get as a new government, we need to pass the word that we are committed. You know, we are clearly committed as individuals and as a governmental team as well, you know, and of course our leader, the president, we are committed to a change. We are committed to democracy, you know, and we are committed to work seriously, you know, and set the example of a total no to corruption, you know. So, and in all of these spaces give us the opportunity to pass that message and to tell it's not only a discourse. It's in practice that as we are trying to do, as hard as possible, as fast as possible, as efficiently as possible, and against all odds.
Excellent. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this event. If you'd like to listen to more events or explore our other podcasts, visit usip.org/podcasts.